Hello, everybody. It's Otelli Edwards here. Welcome to another episode of A Deep Dive together with my co-host, Steve Chia.
Hello, hello. Yes, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about electric vehicles or EVs. Have you ever driven one? Well, I know you currently drive.
Well, mine is so not EV.
Yours is
my current car is so old school. Yeah. It's, as they call it, ice. It's beyond ice.
I think it's beyond ice. Mine as well, because I drive a 18-year-old car.
Yeah, pretty old.
Petrol vehicle. Yeah. So we are about to make that crucial decision if we should switch to an EV or not.
But I have driven EVs before, and actually loads of fun. I mean, they're really fast, they're really zippy. And the best part about it, in Singapore's weather, you can leave the aircon on even when you're waiting somewhere in the car. That is, for me...
I'm not sure you're allowed to leave it idle, though, while you're
parked
somewhere.
There's no pollution, so you can for an EV. But your and my car, we can't leave it either. And the seats have these vents that blow out air.
Wow, that's the best, I can see you are already for that reason. Yeah, so that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And actually, EVs was quite a novelty in the past, right?
Yeah.
But now it has become mainstream. And I remember Tesla was obviously, you know, the it car back then.
Yeah.
But now, apparently, Chinese car maker BYD, they've overtaken everyone else to become Singapore's top seller. Brand, well, in the first 4 months of this year at least. And they actually make up 20% of total vehicle sales. That's quite impressive.
Yeah. So that's why we want to talk about electric vehicles and in Singapore's climate, you know, whether you should get one, when should you get one. We know that registrations for ICE cars, for the petrol, you know, the older vehicles, will eventually come to an end. They're being phased out by 2030. So a lot of people are thinking, when do I make the
switch? We keep talking about ICE cars, right? But
do they even know what ICE is? No, not that. Internal combustion engine. Basically, just means your car uses petrol.
Yeah, it basically means it's a non-EV car. Okay, good. We've got that out of the way.
Okay.
Let's just start with the whole big picture question about some of the biggest pain points that we have when it comes to driving an EV in Singapore, and it has got to be the lack of charging points. So in terms of infrastructure, I know we are now in 2025, we have that 2030 goal to meet. I mean, are we there yet? Walter?
Yeah, so I think this is an interesting question, because from the perspective of a user, right, and I happen to own an EV, I've owned an EV for the last 4 years or so, I think whether you've got charging infrastructure or not is something that is really dependent on your use case, dependent on where you live, where you work, where you play, actually. Because if you happen to work, for example, in a building where there's charging, if you tend to go shopping at malls where there's charging, and if you've got charging at your home or your car park, right, if you're living in HDB, there's absolutely no problem at all. But at the same time, we're also aware of owners who experience some challenges with charging, because they say, I don't have charging at home, don't have it in my workplace, I've got to make detours to charge. And for those kinds of owners, it is actually a hassle. So it's really dependent on where you are, where you're going to go, and so on, actually.
Okay, so right now, that means the infrastructure is not quite there yet to fully support an economy that is driven by EV cars.
Yeah,
is that
well,
right?
Today maybe if I could add, so we do have almost 20,000 charging points around the island today, with about 30,000 EVs. So actually, on a Singapore level, I think if Walter, you agree with me, we do have actually enough. But I do agree with Walter, at the local level, for certain individuals, there might be challenges.
When you say enough, do you mean like the ratio of charging stations to number of cars?
Yes, because for example, as the average Singapore driver like you and me, we drive less than 50 kilometers a day.
Okay.
So translating to a usual average battery life of a vehicle, I think you only need to charge once every 5 days, 7 days. So if you do the math, across the island, we actually have more than enough. But local level, we recognise there's some problem, and that's also why government has made a commitment, at least for HDB estates where we have we can install the chargers. We are committing to ensure that all HDB residents, whether you own an EV today or you plan to own an EV in the future, you will have access to an EV charger by end of this year.
So
we are on track for that.
From what Walter was saying earlier about how certain areas, like, you know, for instance, the Bidadari estate, for instance, where there might be a higher population of EV drivers as opposed to maybe other estates. So, I mean, are we there yet in terms of assessing, you know, or the finer details, like the profile of drivers in certain estates? And does that mean we need to recalibrate how many charging points we need?
Yeah. So sure, I mean, we do track this, obviously, utilization of chargers. When is it time to upscale chargers? So we are in the midst of looking at that, because adoption actually has been very, very encouraging. Much more encouraging, yep, I think, than we had thought a few years ago. So we are realizing that it's time for us to think about upscaling. Initially, when we made the commitment, I think government, we've made the commitment to put at least 3 to 12 chargers, depending on the size of car park, in the car parks. Yeah. So for now, we know that adoption is going up and we need to start thinking about upscaling.
Okay, so just to be clear, when you say adoption, it means there are more people buying EVs,
yeah,
you know,
right,
as time progresses. There are around 19,000 electric vehicle charging points in public areas, yeah, you know, and also counting condos, commercial buildings. But the thing is, if you live in an HDB flat, there's a multi-story car park, let's say 200 lots,
yep,
but there are only 5 charging stations. So, you know, you'll be thinking, doesn't make sense, right? So
yes,
even if there are only 100 cars that are EVs out of the 200, I can't charge my car because there are only 5 charging stations.
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing now is there's actually a problem with optimization rather than with charging availability per se. So I think what the government has done, which is really great, is in the first phase of deployment, they've aimed to put chargers basically within reach of all residents of Singapore, especially HBO residents, right? But I think what we're seeing is that in some pockets, you could have cases where there are lots of people owning EV and still there's only the baseline number of chargers there. And in other districts, such as where I'm living, there's probably an excess number of chargers relative to EV owners. And that's because in the first phase, it's just about getting the chargers out there. I think the next couple of months and years, it becomes really important to optimize.
But the ratio makes sense, the optimization, the numbers make sense, but I just don't feel comfortable,
yes,
knowing
there's
the reassurance,
that,
right?
Yeah, you know? Because there's no assurance of
exactly,
if I come home late, will I get a charger?
Yeah.
So we are tracking these numbers. Obviously, one of the ways we're doing it is we're monitoring the numbers when we realize that the charging points are getting full quite often on a daily basis, then we will need to start looking into upscaling. For some car parks, we're already looking into that.
Yeah.
I'll be honest to say electrical infrastructure is something that is holding us back. Many of these car parks do not have sufficient electrical capacity. So we have rolling out the tenders already. We've just called one to upscale the charging infrastructure at these car parks so that when the time comes,
so
we are
in
ready.
A nutshell, we're talking a lot about, you know, having all these charging stations. I mean, are we going to be ready by 2030? I mean, are these things going to be ironed out? Because then they're not going to be new ice car purchases, mm-hmm, or taxis, you see, come 2030. And then there's a bigger goal of 2040. So do you think we're going to get there by 2030? That we won't be having the same conversation 5 years from now?
No, so I think we will get there. But I'll have to say that I think it's not just an infrastructure issue. It is also an issue of whether the mindset of how you use the car and charge a car actually can change.
Yeah.
So I'll give you some examples of this, right? So I think when we talk to new EV owners, we find that a number of them actually adopt the same mindset as they used to when they were petrol car owners, which is to say they run their battery down, you know, to like 10% or something like that. Then they go and look for somewhere to charge. Yeah. Let's say like a petrol station where they've got high power chargers, and they go there and they sit there, you know, for 1 hour and wait for the car to charge or something like that, right? And after doing this for a couple of months, they tell everybody they know, you know, owning an EV is so terrible, you know, I have to spend 1 hour every couple of days charging and so on. And the issue of that is that they're not really
using
it.
Fast charger?
Yeah, but they're not using it the way it's intended to be used. That's the issue, you see.
Okay, so pray tell,
you're
not supposed
to charge up like you would pumping petrol.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So you don't wait till
could charge as and when is what we encourage.
Yeah.
People, you happen to be in the supermarket and you happen to see a charger that's available, go and top it up.
Yeah.
At night when you go home, if there's a charger available, please top up. There's no need to like wait.
Exactly.
So I want to move on and talk about this etiquette when it comes to, you know, there are some as known as hoggers, right? When you're hogging, like let's say, you know, the EV lot for like ages to the point that we have to impose fines because we are a fine city. So that's something we have to
we're
do.
So good.
And at this point, has that worked? I mean, are we seeing, you know, less of these car park hoggers?
Yeah, so the question is, who has taken charge?
Well, there we go. So we are trying to educate Singaporeans as well about how do you charge. Please be considerate for fellow motorists. Please move out after you finish charging. We obviously don't expect someone at 3 a.m. to move their vehicle. We're more talking about fast chargers or during the daytime. If you finish charging, please move out. So these are some of the messages that we keep
trying to encourage. Actually, what is the fine like and what is the grace period? once you're done charging
it's different.
Your car?
Every operator imposes different lot hogging fees. So it depends. So but like, generally, what we see, they only impose it, like say, after 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. So obviously, no one expects you to move your vehicle.
But at the same time, if we continue to see the number of EV cars picking up, there'll be greater demand for these charging stations. So it's possible such fines will increase, you know. But at the same time, the convenience people are saying, if I come home for the evening, I came home at 5 o'clock, can't I just leave my car till the next day? Even though, you know...
Well, if you park your car at 5 o'clock, most likely you will leave your car there for the
whole evening. But I'm just saying, but it may kick in that at 9 p.m. you're fully charged, so therefore you you know, you should remove your car otherwise, right?
Yeah, so that's where I think optimization comes in. And by optimization, I mean looking at different ways that you price for charging, for example, right? So what we see in the market today is most charge operators, they tend to have a uniform tariff. Basically, they charge you a certain amount per kilowatt hour, and it doesn't really vary by time of day and so on. But there's no reason why they have to do it that way. They could, for example, implement some kind of differentiated tariff to encourage people to charge at off-peak hours.
Right.
You could also look at situations like overnight charging, whether it might be appropriate to charge a minimum charge for the entire nighttime block so as to discourage people from plugging in when they're like 70%, you know, and then using it the whole night. I mean, these are issues that I say are optimization because they can be adjusted by changing how you price as well as how you educate people. And that's how you use a limited resource better.
Yeah, exactly.
So here I want to know as well, this is very important, right? Because as we are thinking of, I mean, buying a car in Singapore is not like a decision you make lightly, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a costly affair. So even though we're going EV, it is still costly, even though we've got the early adoption incentive, the vehicular emission scheme, et cetera, et cetera, to encourage people to make that switch. But there is also additional road tax component, right? If you drive an EV, something like $700 on top of the annual road tax. Yeah. So all in, right, in a nutshell, can you just explain to me, considering whether I am... buying an ICE car versus switching to an EV? I mean, are they, does it work out to about the same, or is one clearly cheaper than the other?
Yeah, so if you look at EV, right, the main components that you tend to save on are, first, you tend to save a bit on the maintenance and operating costs other than fuel.
Yep.
And that's because a lot of EVs, they're expected to have lower life cycle maintenance costs than ICE cars, because you essentially don't have to keep on replacing basically the oil and fluids and things like that. And you don't have to send the motor for tune-ups and things of that sort. So operating costs are expected to be lower. And in fact, you see that a number of EV manufacturers are actually confident enough in the reliability of their product, they bundle it with free servicing, or in fact tell you that no servicing is required for the foreseeable lifetime of the vehicle. So that's one option, right? That's one thing. The other area comes to the fuel and operating costs, the fuel costs, right? And there, it's actually an issue of what are you comparing to? You know, what's the like-for-like comparison? Because what we've seen in the market is if you're able to charge at home, that is, if you live in land and you have access to home charging and you pay the SP tariff, right, you will almost certainly have lower running costs than any ICE or hybrid vehicle in the market.
Yep.
However, with public charging, it really depends on what's the tariff you're paying, because with some public charging rates, it could be comparable to a good hybrid. With others, it could be better or worse. It really depends what you're paying for charging.
But so overall, would you say it is cheaper to own an EV car versus an ICE car moving forward?
Yeah, so
it will be, right?
Yeah. So in the market right now, I'd say if you're looking at a premium kind of vehicle with a high power, larger vehicle and so on, it's probably cheaper in the operating cost for the EV because they save a lot on petrol versus hybrids or ICE. But if you're looking at a very mass market vehicle, comparing it to a best-in-class hybrid, it's actually a bit more even. And the reason why it's more even today is largely because of expensive charging. Unfortunately, public charging rates now are actually pretty high compared to what you can pay if you had access to home charging at the SP tariff.
If I go over to Malaysia, you know, what are the cost going to be like? And not to mention that, I mean...
Oh, it's free because maybe cannot find the charging station.
And then you're stuck there. So actually, speaking of which, that there's this thing called range anxiety, right?
Yeah.
So I would be one of those that would be quite worried to be, you know, driving across a causeway and then in an EV, and then I'm like, where's the next charging station? You know, what if I can't find one? And then what if I run out of bet, you know, it's a little bit with the handphone as well. You start panicking if it's down to like 10%. So is that still like a concern? I mean, Singapore we know, but then for drivers who, you know, want to go to Malaysia and shop and all that?
Actually, many of our operators already today, actually they have charges all the way up to Thailand. Yep. So yep. For I think water, not sure
yeah,
whether
that's
you have
right. Is it good enough? Yeah,
are they enough? Yeah. And we are. Yeah. I mean, Singaporeans should also be assured that the standards are similar. So the type of charging points are similar. The connectors are the same. So you have no worry about connection problems if you go up to Malaysia. And I think many of operators actually in their apps they also show all their charges all the way up.
Yeah, that's right.
So how many times have you gone to Malaysia in your EV?
Actually, almost a dozen times. So I'll tell you what it is. Yeah. Right, when COVID ended, right, and the borders first opened and so on, I actually drove to KL, right, to see relatives. And at that point in time, there was only one high-power charging station between Johor and KL. And if that station was out, it was not going to be good,
you
right?
You could still drive all the way to KL,
So I drove there. I drove there. I stopped at the charging station. I charged, and it was fine, right? Yeah. Towards the end of last year, when I did the drive again, there was a charging point at almost every other R&R or just off the highway, about every 50 kilometers or so. So it would have been really difficult for me to run out of battery last year. Mm. So I think nowadays it's no longer an issue if you're going to a major city in West Malaysia. Maybe to parts in the East Coast, small villages, okay. But the major city, no problem whatsoever.
And over time, the infrastructure can only improve, right? Yes.
So earlier, because Walter, you were saying that hardly any maintenance for your EV because there's not
so
much to
change your tires.
The tires, every 2 years.
Brakes, okay. You use your brakes less though.
This is something about a fun fact that I think most people don't know. Yeah. EVs are actually a lot simpler vehicles than ICE cars. The number of moving parts, I think, is a lot more complex in an ICE than
my old school thinking is that, you know, it's all like kind of like all the electronics and all that. If something breaks down, you know, how does that work? I mean, AA is still there, right? And then the other thing is, do we have enough like mechanics? I don't know, because the current mechanics who are familiar with,
you know, what's the difference? It's like a computer. It's just a software update.
Oh, so we don't even need,
and it can be done over the air.
Exactly.
You don't even need to go to the workshop.
They will just log in to this website, and they were like, "Ding, some download."
Yeah. I think for EVs, most people's concern about will probably be the battery. Mm. That's the most complex thing about the vehicle.
We want to ask you about that because a lot of stories say that it only lasts, for example, like 10 years. After that, or it's like a mobile phone, you know. Every year it loses some of its charge. It takes longer to recharge. It doesn't last as long. Any truth to that? And, you know, how
so I think that's the biggest question mark.
Yeah.
And only time will tell, I think. But also that battery technology is improving by leaps and bounds all the time. But I think one good thing that we have is that most of the EVs that are being sold in Singapore, actually now they are guaranteeing having a 10-year warranty of the battery. So I think that should give Singaporeans some.
But it's not like after 10 years, because I got to renew COE, so can I change battery or so? Like buy it?
Yes, you could. I mean, right? With the OEMs, with the
battery. Although the battery is a large cost
chunk
of the...
So what we see in the market is the reality is if you own an EV, you do experience gradual degradation of the maximum charge level over time. So my EV is about 4 years old. It charges to, I would say, about 90%+ of the original. And that's natural. All the EVs go through that. Okay. But what the manufacturers do is they tend to warrant it to hold a minimum maximum charge, right? After at least, up to at least about 8 years or so. So the standard in industry is about 70% maximum charge, right? That's the threshold below which they have to replace your battery under warranty. The other issue regarding reliability is there are a large number of EV models used as taxis in other countries. And the operator's experience has been that generally those taxi EVs far exceed the warranty mileage in terms of, you know, before they need the battery overhaul to replace. So I don't think for Singaporeans where we, you know, like we don't clock that much mileage unless we're a taxi driver. I mean, I don't think it's a concern within a 10-year period of your COE.
What about hybrid cars? I mean, do they still factor in? I mean, is there still a place for hybrid cars? Or
for policy-wise, 2030, you just need to purchase a cleaner energy vehicle. So pure ICE is not allowed. But 2030, you still can buy a hybrid vehicle.
Oh, cleaner. So even if I clean my exhaust pipe, still not allowed.
But yeah, is there any value? I mean, if you want to go electric, the only thing I can see the perk is then, you know, again, if I'm like insecure driving across a causeway, I have the opportunity to decide either I want to put petrol in my car or charge the battery, you see.
Yeah, but I think 2030, we will see, because I do see battery technologies improving so much. I'm not sure... I mean, we will only know closer to 2030 whether it still makes sense to purchase a hybrid at that point in time.
Right. That being said, I think there's also this, you know, narrative that sometimes goes around, which is that I should hold off buying my EV because technology will improve, right? Mm. But I think at this point, you have much less to be concerned about than you might have had, let's say, 10 years ago. I think it's true that if you look at EVs designed and built in the 2010s, none of them actually, technologically speaking, are comparable to those today. Yep. But actually, the EVs that were built in the early 2020s are pretty similar to the ones you can buy today, to the newest designs and so on, because the rate at which technology improves has actually flattened out quite a bit. And I'm saying that just because I think there are a lot of people on the fence saying if I buy today, in 2 years' time, it's going to be completely obsoleted. But I'm saying it's not true. The ones you bought in 2020 are still very, very comparable to the ones you buy today.
You just need to do a software update.
No, and in Singapore's context, honestly, we don't drive that much. Yeah. So I don't think you need that large a battery or that.
Okay, but what about resale value?
Yeah, so I think resale value, I was just talking to some people in the industry to find out a bit, to understand it a bit more. I think the issue about resale value is something that we are still watching and looking very closely. And I think there are not enough in the market now for us to have a better sense of what the resale is.
So I think the main contributor to this idea that EVs have very bad resale value has actually been something that, you know, from another perspective, we should be happy about, which is that the manufacturers have actually been, over the last couple of years, continually dropping the price of their EVs. And the reason why they've been cutting the price has largely been because the technology has been maturing, so the cost of getting the EV out of the factory door has been dropping. But to the extent that that's going to flatten off, right, we shouldn't expect this kind of, you might say, surprise to happen anymore. And I think there's signs that if you look at the Chinese market, for example, which has been responsible for driving a lot of these cost reductions, Chinese government has been talking in recent months about how prices are unsustainably low, which to me signals that I think perhaps this era of cost cutting or price cutting is going to come to an end. And if it does come to an end, I think there's much less of an issue for resale value because it's primarily been driven by, you know, why should I buy a used EV when the new one is being sold to me for less, you know?
So there's also this idea that, you know, I mean, the profile of EV buyers at this point are generally men in between 40 and 60, and they have the tendency, like, they want the next new shiny gadget. So it's a second car that they want to buy and want to try out. And then, so that's what I mean. You see that do you see that trend moving forward? That, you know, it's about upgrading. You know, every 2 years, if the new technology comes in, BYD has something
Drive. No, midlife crisis. You don't go and buy it. You
but
buy
you
something.
Drive a vintage. Yeah, you know, I think when Walter bought his car, many years ago, I think it was probably.
Yeah, look, he's so young. But
now I don't think so. I think the average Singaporean is already purchasing.
My mom just got an EV just last year. We were a bit concerned that it should be taking off too fast, so we got her
That takes some getting used to.
No, I'll agree with that to a certain point. I mean, I think it's true. When I got the car and a couple of years ago, your Tesla buyer was your kind of like tech bro, crypto bro kind of thing, right? But today, I think it's not true anymore. You see lots of families being interested in EVs, all the mass market EVs as well from BYD and so on. And those are all family car buyers, you know? Mm. So I think it's much less the case that it's just a toy.
So how long are you going to be keeping your current car for? Wow. You reckon?
Well,
in Singapore, it all depends on COE prices,
right?
I am trying to figure out, should I, you know,
Tesla
like,
just came out
but I'm looking at COE prices, so, you know.
I know, COE prices are our bane here in Singapore, you know. I mean, electric cars are a lot of fun, I gotta admit, so you should try one, you know. They can even drift. Do you know what they call that?
Drifting? You mean like too fast, like, too furious, is it?
Yeah, they call that the electric
slide. Okay, maybe not.
Electric slides.
So I guess, I mean, if I potentially, actually I will be a first time EV buyer, I just want to know golden advice from each of you. What would you say to me? What's the biggest takeaway I need to know, you know?
Yeah, looking at her face, understanding the character, and you're like sussing her out, you know?
Yeah, but what should I know? I mean, before I, you know, make a decision, for instance. Walter?
You know, I'd say don't overbuy, right? And by don't overbuy, I mean that I think a lot of buyers. When you see what you're offered in the market, right? There are a lot of bells and whistles that the manufacturers dangle. For example, they have got
the
higher end versions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that that's a bell and whistle, obviously.
so a common thing in the market is that you've got like long range and standard range models, right? And the long range models cost a lot more. They pack more battery and so on. And I think sometimes people think, oh, I need to buy the long range, the premium version, to get, you know, just that 20-30% more range. But in reality, in the Singapore market or Singapore driving, you will not need that unless you have a very special use case, like maybe you are a salesman or something like that. You clock several hundred kilometers a day.
Or I'm drifting, as you were saying.
Yeah, you really want to.
No, thanks.
So maybe don't overbuy beyond your needs, because what you'll find is that your cost of ownership is going to be a lot lower if you get, for example, the most mass market model out there. And don't worry about the range, because range is actually not an issue in Singapore, provided that you're not that tiny percent of the population with no charging anywhere where they want to go. But for most of us, it's not the case. You have charging at least somewhere, home, work, or
media
somewhere
where
you go.
All our crew vehicles are electric, so we have to. Yeah.
I would agree with that. I don't think there's a need to overbuy. I think be mindful about what your patterns are. Know what kind of driver you are, how long you drive, what's your mileage generally, and then you will be able to know. Maybe think about how you plan to charge your vehicle. If you, for now, when you drive around, your patterns, or if you see the usual malls that you go to, or then you're assured of where you can possibly charge. I think these are some of the things that you probably need.
Now, the type of driver is important, because actually, if you're a bad driver, actually you shouldn't buy a car at all.
You should drive possibly an EV now that they can park the car for you.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to worry about them.
So we will have less bad drivers on the road. Maybe, because the self-driving will eventually be a thing.
I'm not sure why you're looking at me, you know, Steve.
Like, yeah.
There's just no
I've seen you on the road, Telly. I see that car.
You know, let me take off my EV driver hat for a while, because obviously as a driver, I just want more subsidies, right? But I want to say, I think from the national perspective, the aim of the subsidies was only to try to get to EVs to price parity with conventional vehicles. And I think in the next couple of years, the subsidies will likely be less and less necessary for this price parity, because the manufacturing cost of EVs has been dropping so much. So I would say from a public finance perspective, maybe we can, you know, scale down the subsidies as the actual, you know, buying cost of the EV drops. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you can buy, because they've made it. That's why
I'm convinced. Yeah,
that's why they call
convinced.
EVs, because they are EVier to buy.
Okay. On that note,
we're going to wrap it up. So thanks so much for joining us here on Deep Dive. We hope you've enjoyed this discussion. As always, if you've got any thoughts, comments, just drop us a note, give us a comment on YouTube where you see this. We do love to hear from you. All the people who work hard behind the scenes: Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Saya Win, Hanida Amin, Shaza Dalila, and Allison Jenner. That's it for Deep Dive. See you next week.
See you next week.